Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
10 seconds.
He rolls into it.
Wow, he might get it.
Take it.
Way of the Warrior.
One of his legs could fight at welterweight, I'm sure.
Probably.
Full mount, here's some ground and pound by Nogueira.
I think the first 2 minutes were everything we thought it was going to be, and then after that, it was the surprise of the night.
If it happens in MMA, you hear about it here. Your MMA show, Way of the Warrior.
Way of the Warrior, Eric Hallgren, along with Ken Evans. We will try and do our best to stick to MMA talk, although...
Wait, did you hear the big news this week?
What is the big news?
Batman and Superman can fight legally in New York now, so that's pretty cool.
That is very cool.
That's pretty sweet. So yes. Ben Affleck can use that Conor McGregor style and roll on in there. And
he absolutely can. That, of course, is the big news, is that MMA is professional MMA is officially legally sanctioned in the state of New York. Now, it will be, what, that happened on Monday, so we're like...
What is it, 180 days, they
120
said?
120 days. So we're now like at 116 days till you can actually have a fight there.
Are you literally counting it down?
Well, only because it's this week. I'll stop counting after the show.
Oh, that's fine. The only reason I ask is because the UFC, I know you're on the mailing list too, but I don't know how many times you just kind of spam them out. But like their whole e-blast this week to the fans was all about New York.
Yep.
Like fighters from New York, fighters who might fight in New York. Hey, look, we got New York in the logo now. So they really have been working on this a long time. Who was the guy that was holding it up that had to go to prison, essentially, for this to happen?
Oh, yeah, I forget what his name was, but yeah, because he was corrupt and held the whole thing up.
And what's really funny is, like, for years, Dana's been saying, hey, this guy's corrupt. The only reason he's doing it is because of some union thing that's happening in Vegas. This guy's on the take, blah, 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 blah. Dude goes to prison. MMA's legal in New York.
Although, I mean,
that's kind of insane. That's like a movie plot. Like, that guy gets that far into the state assembly house to just say no to possible things happening in the state. Laws and legislation. I'm just not going to look at it. I'm totally corrupt. That's where you actually need Batman there.
Oh, yes, but did you watch any of the actual assembly?
Because no.
Because, as I said on Monday, if that was... even a microcosm of what happens in any other part of the country, we are doomed.
Oh, politically?
Doomed as a society.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that I've ever heard, and I've been talking to a lot of people here in the office about who are into MMA, about this, that I've never seen a collection of people who are elected officials in one way or another that were so ill-informed on a topic, any topic, that were then still allowed to decide whether or not that topic was going to
clearly
go into...
You've never watched C-SPAN, because this happens like all the time in the Senate. Like, you'll hear the most mundane questions about things that you should just know about by being a person.
Okay, but let me just recap if you didn't watch it, as you said you didn't. At one point, one of the assembly members stands up and says, this is two half-naked hot guys rolling around on the floor. This is gay porn with a different ending. Heretofore should not be legal in New York. That was one elected official. There
okay.
was another who wasn't quite, she wasn't quite sure why she was there, because she was inferring that they were deciding whether or not MMA could be on the TV in the state of New York.
On the TV.
Nobody had explained to her it's already on the TV.
Mm-hmm.
Then
maybe it's not on her TV, and that's why she kept saying the TV.
There were assembly members that were making giant leaps in correlation, saying that most MMA fighters engage in domestic violence and that most MMA fighters are suffering from concussions. Concussions, mind you, Ken Evans, that according to them were more rampant and far more dangerous than concussions that happen in the NFL.
Or boxing, perhaps?
Just the NFL.
Just the NFL?
Yes.
Like, they weren't even bold enough to talk about boxing.
Well, I don't even know that they know that boxing is legal in their state. That is the sense I got.
Is it on the TV?
Yes, on the TVs. What's interesting coming out of this, and this is the feeling I've had essentially all week, and I'd love to get your take on this, is I get the sense that we've been trying to figure out what they're going to do at UFC 200, what's going to happen at UFC 200, who's going to fight at UFC 200, and then this happens, and I get my spidey sense goes off, and I think to myself, oh, MSG is going to be quote-unquote UFC 200. That's going to be where they're going to do
their... Does the timing work?
No, the timing does not work. I'm saying is that's going to be their diamond event for 2016. Like, they're going to do 200, much in the same way that you and I were talking, that they really didn't... They didn't know that UFC 100 was supposed to be a big thing till the fans were like, oh my God, it's UFC 100! You know, so you're probably going to get McGregor and Diaz signed in the next couple days. That's probably going to be a thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know what else is going to end up on that card, and I would expect that UFC MSG, whatever that ends up being, if it's the saved date in November, that's what I would look to be their big card of the year, injuries notwithstanding.
Which is going to be really interesting, too, because obviously they would have loved to have had Rockhold-Weidman rematch there, but that's already on deck for us.
They can do the trilogy.
They could, depending on how that goes. They could do the trilogy. John Jones was in our little e-blast this week. Remember, he's from New York, New Jersey. I forget which.
I don't remember. Nobody told me that all week long.
He's from the area, I hear.
Yes. And of course,
he's crashed into a couple trees in town.
Yes. You have the Conor McGregor, Frankie Edgar that they sort of want to do.
So Frankie might get the fight now.
He might only
because it's in New York.
Yes.
You got to love that about the UFC.
He's from New Jersey, so therefore.
It counts.
It counts.
Because they couldn't do 30 New Jersey shows, which they've already done.
But this is huge news, again, to set some context. The state of New York was allowing essentially everything else except for professional MMA.
Right. So amateur MMA, which
amateur
was
MMA.
Essentially unregulated.
Right. Totally okay.
You could do that, and guys were probably getting hurt. I mean, I don't have anything in front of me, so I don't want to make an emphatic statement there. But, I mean, we know how a lot of these events are run.
And even the UFC wasn't going to comment on that because there was a couple questions in the press conference on Monday night afterwards about, hey, did you see any? And I believe the journalist used the word atrocities. Which that was an interesting choice. Atrocities in the amateur MMA in New York City.
Let's remember the push here wasn't to legalize MMA or legalize UFC. The push was to regulate MMA. And in so doing, that would allow the UFC to legally run events. And that's been their push the entire time, which made it even more frustrating each time this would come up and whatever crooked state assemblyman or whatever would not put it on the docket, would not look at it, would not discuss it reasonably, essentially let these unregulated MMA events continue at an amateur level.
Yep.
Again, this was for regulation of MMA in New York State, not for legalization of UFC or legalization of professional MMA. But the regulation now allows legal professional MMA and legal UFC events to happen.
And what was always, you know, not only that, what was always more ridiculous, Ken, is that there was boxing in the state, there was kickboxing
that's
in the state,
thing.
There was professional wrestling.
Pro wrestling's
in the
state.
All that stuff.
And what's really weird is because pro wrestling has a lot of weird regulations in New York that they don't have anywhere else.
Like what?
They treat it as if it's real. For the best way to say that. So they do a lot of the meta, and not that those guys aren't athletes, can't get hurt, those type
of
things.
Right.
But they deal with a lot of regulation in New York they don't deal with anywhere else because it's essentially it's regulated like boxing. So it's a little bit strange when they do those New York events. Obviously, the big company in the world that does that, very familiar with New York, so they still run the events. New York is now going to be very interesting to look at because you've got the regulation there. Their athletic commission, I assume, is going to take a hold of these events, the same commission that regulates boxing, the same commission that's been pointed at by boxing as being one of the worst in the nation
sure.
and most corrupt in the nation.
Sure.
And when you see how their government works, you can kind of see it. So now over here, we've got this new New York State Athletic Commission. I think that's what it's actually called. I'm not 100% sure. But whatever it's called in New York is now going to be running these MMA events, which are going to be very lucrative, very profitable, and like you said, possibly tentpole events here and there for the UFC. Again, that's great. We've got New York, but man, it's going to be very interesting to see how this commission rolls because we've seen it with the CSAC all the way on the other side of the country where Strikeforce was running events and Elite XC and those type of events were running there. They got used to the commissions, but a lot of times a fighter would pop for a drug that he didn't pop for anywhere else, or he'd have a problem that he didn't have anywhere else. And the issue when you're running shows in the United States is that essentially you agree that one commission's ruling, you'll abide by it wherever you fight. So if you lose a big fighter like Josh Barnett got
yep.
popped by the CSAC, essentially, he had to wait that entire time out to fight anywhere because he can't fight Strikeforce, can't fight UFC, can't fight for anybody that's basically working on a national basis. Because you agree that even though, boy, their appeals process is messed up, and boy, we really didn't know about this rule, and this was really shady the way you did your test, you still have to abide by that. Now we've got another California over here. It's going to be very interesting to see how the New York State Athletic Commission runs their shows, runs their events, and hands out punishment if there's an issue, because one of the better commissions in the country is right next door. A lot of people really like the New Jersey
yes.
Athletic Commission.
Yes.
They helped come up with the unified rules that everybody follows. They were one of the pioneers in the sport when you changed it from John McCain's comment of cockfighting to what it is today as a sport. They ran a lot of shows in Jersey before they even ran them in Nevada. So it's going to be really interesting to see that dynamic, because you're now able to run in New York, but you're now beholden to their commission. Be interesting to see what that commission ends up looking like as we start running events, especially big events. Because you put John Jones on a card there, something happens to John Jones, which has happened before.
Yep.
New York decides, oh, you're going to get a 6-year ban. I heard they do 5 years in Nevada for weed, so we're going to do 6 years. And you just put your biggest draw on the card in right. New York State, where you don't know how this could. I'm not saying they're going to do that, but I am saying, look at how the legislature has been run.
Yeah, I will tell you.
Look
like,
at what happened on Monday.
As somebody who watched the legislature happen, I would be scared to death to actually do an event there.
Think about how CSAC is run, and just think about how insane the Nevada Commission can be sometimes. I'm not saying that they're going to do this poorly, but I'm certainly saying it's going to be interesting. This is the devil you don't know in this commission, and we're going to see how they run shows, and I'm sure we'll see it very soon. I'm sure UFC is going to essentially lock down whatever date they can as soon as this 120 days is up.
And what they said was they wanted to run two events before the year is up, and that MSG would not likely be the first one.
No, they'll probably want to run something. They'll probably Barclays, I'm guessing.
Barclay? I mean, I guess it
they could run Barclays. They could also run, obviously, Long Island they could run on now. They could run in Queens. I'm not sure where they'd run there. There's a lot of different places where they can get their feet wet without messing with MSG, so to speak.
Yeah, so expect one of those to be first. MSG will be second, and likely, like I said, given all the emails that you're getting if you're on the newsletter, it appears to me very much so that your version in your head right now of UFC 200 is actually going to take place later on in the year at Madison Square Garden.
Is that a good or a bad thing?
I think it's a neutral thing. I mean, the UFC 200 is just a number. And, you know, if you look at what's been happening, number one, it's the end of March and we have nothing signed. We may get McGregor, Nate signed by next week. But other than that, there's nothing else signed. It was supposed to take place, if you remember, a year ago, it was supposed to take place in the new arena in Vegas that was supposed to be named the UFC Arena. Mm-hmm. That didn't happen. The arena is going to exist and it's
right.
going to be
T-Mobile
at the, it's going to be at the T-Mobile Arena. So, I mean, I don't know that the UFC necessarily cares at this point, because they've been working for 8 years to make New York happen. And I think you need to have a huge celebration there, and thus might explain, you know, they obviously would know prior to Monday where the votes were leaning, and maybe they knew that they wanted to move it to Madison Square Garden. I just get the sense that that's going to be the big card of the year.
Well, it'll be interesting, too, and we'll talk a little bit about UFC 200 because, I mean, there was a big move within the industry as far as that card goes. A lot of people are saying with UFC 200, Nate Diaz, Conor McGregor, the fact that that was reported by Ariel Helwani may be the reason that Ariel is no longer part of the UFC Tonight program and the UFC Tonight programming on Fox Sports. What do you think about that move? Because we talked about it a lot. I really like Ariel Helwani. He's a guy that's been hustling. I mean, he's a guy that we bumped into years and years ago.
And has always been super nice.
Right. And, working the small level shows, just like a lot of dudes have been for a long time. But he's always had that hustle. He ends up making it, quote unquote, big time and working essentially with the UFC by being part of their broadcast partner with Fox, UFC Tonight. There's been a lot of rumors, though, that the fact that he released the news that he probably acquired through independent sources has caused that breakup essentially between him and Fox. He's still working with MMA Fighting, still has the MMA Hour, still doing his quote unquote main job. But I would have to say his most high profile gig is now gone.
Yes, but and it might very well be that leak, and it certainly could be the Rory discussion on the MMA Hour, or the two things that people are talking about. Rory saying, this is my last fight on my contract, and mm-hmm. then kind of starting that free agency talk on the heels of Matt Mitrione and this has always been the contentious relationship between Ariel and Dana White, is kind of putting the UFC in a negative light. And for Ariel and his journalism, I think this is an okay move.
Yeah.
Like, it's really hard for you to be, and again, I'm not comparing journalism in the sense of covering terrorist attacks in Brussels to you know, the fourth branch of government, quote unquote, in covering MMA. But it's really hard when you work for the company to do insight.
And to be clear, he worked with the partner, and there have been issues before with other brands.
Close enough that it's.
It's called
Gray.
The UFC Tonight, but I mean, let's not forget. There's also NFL Today on CBS, the NFL on Fox. I mean, this isn't strange as far as the branding goes
be
independent.
No, it's not strange, but in this particular instance, Ken, the UFC only has one TV partner, which is Fox,
right.
And you work for Fox, so it's as close as you can be without being employed by the UFC.
And that's essentially what the perception was for a lot of people, is that this is the UFC show. And it is. And that's the way Fox focuses it. But it's certainly an instance where there was an independence there. I mean, like you said, journalistically, he's going to be able to get more credit, I think, for some of the stories he breaks, too. Because there were a lot of rumblings about, well, he's favored nation. That's why he knew that first. Or
yeah,
he knows this first.
The rumors were Dana would text him the leak and he would leak it and make it look like they, you know, and they would be controlling the spin, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And that may or may not continue. It depends on what the... how far out he is right now. But yeah, he's going to get a lot more credit for breaking stuff because he's actually going to be breaking it using his contacts in the organization.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting too. I'm sure there's a non-compete, but I mean, you gotta expect ESPN would be looking at a guy like that too. I mean, he's going to have another big level gig, I guess. I'm guessing at some point.
The Ringer might think about, you know what I mean? That would be a place where they could
put...
What
is The Ringer?
The Bill Simmons thing? The post-Grantland,
oh, sure.
You know, the post-Grantland world.
Are we still
world?
Paying attention to that? I didn't know.
Okay, all right.
No, I mean, it's great. No, that's good. I'm just saying, you're looking at me now. You're giving me a look.
Because that's hurtful.
Well, no, that's not hurtful. I'm just
trying to have a conversation.
I'm just saying.
About things that happen and could happen.
I'm just saying.
In the world.
I think podcasting is a fad, so I'm not sure about Bill Simmons. Well, that's all I'm wondering.
We're 8 years into this fad. We should probably have a discussion at some point. But yeah, I mean... The breaking of this news could be the reason that he's out. I mean, Jeff Wagenheim from Sports Illustrated, that's exactly what he said this week. He said true sports fans of MMA know exactly why he was let go.
Well, and UFC has always had a very, very controlling approach to any of their partners. And it's beneficial in some cases.
Sure.
Hey, we want to make sure the production is this. We want to do this. We want to do this. That was the reason for so many years the CBS deal didn't get done. That was the reason for so many years that NBC deal didn't get done. And remember, they all went with somebody else. So the UFC, I don't think, was blowing smoke about those companies being interested in MMA.
Right.
CBS ended up with Affliction and Strikeforce.
At some point, yeah.
Elite XC, NBC ended up with World Series of Fighting, but I think there was a lot of controlling issues there, and it's a maturation process. It's still growing. I mean, I'm sure, you know, the NFL 25, 30, 40 years ago, they probably wanted to control their product a lot more than they control it today because they realized at a certain point, you're going to have multiple TV partners, you're going to have journalists inside each of these programs, and you're going to have to let them, quote unquote, do their job. You can't control every aspect of this. Sometimes we look at UFC, it's this global brand, it's this number one brand in MMA, but it still very much feels like it's run by, you know, a couple of guys in a room somewhere. And yeah, they're going to get pissed. Like, this guy works for us and he broke this news and we didn't have a chance. And look at, and not only did he break the news, but the backlash on that card. And I said the backlash seems a little bit crazy considering this was just the biggest card in UFC history. I get it. Some people don't want them going to the well again necessarily, but it was pretty harsh for that rematch. You would agree, I would say.
I would totally agree. But
so that on top of the fact that our quote unquote guy released that info. And now it's making the rounds like this. You know, I could definitely see the UFC being upset about that. Should they have been? No. But I could see it. And I could see that being a case where maybe things for Ariel Helwani just look a little bit greener elsewhere at this point.
For sure. And I guess to circle back really with the backlash, I think the backlash is in part because it just happened. And the other part is because this seems... regardless of the money and the pay-per-view, which are the logical reasons to do this a second time, it seems, I would guess, from a casual fan's perspective, that they should be planning UFC 200 a little bit further out, where this feels like the lazy way out.
I don't know if it's a lazy way out. I think there's an unrealistic expectation when you look at all these cards and how they're laying out for anybody to expect... expect a lot more from this card. I mean, I get that you want to plan towards these things, but there was a lot that happened. Ronda was supposed to be on this card. Ronda, I don't know if she's not in hiding. I don't know what she's doing right now.
Yeah, I don't know what she's doing either.
You know, there was a talk about a championship fight at the heavyweight level. Well, that fight got pushed because of the injury Verdum had.
Kane first, then
Kane. Kane then Verdum. So, I mean, they were thinking about this. Nobody can go, what were they doing? They should have been planning this a year ago. Well, yeah, but things can happen in a year because it's fighting. So, yeah, you've got your goals for this fight. You know, and I know Brock was one of those goals, too. If you're talking about thinking about far in advance, last year, this time of year, they were trying to get Brock back. And I guarantee Brock would have fought once and waited till 200 to fight again.
Yep.
Because they would have wanted to put him back on there. So they've been thinking about it, but fighting is fighting. And you've got a lot of cards you've got to fill out. And, you know, we've already had one card pushed this year that wasn't supposed to be pushed. I think it gave us a nice break between, was it 194 and 95? I'm thinking, whichever one got pushed
it was
most
between,
recently,
it would have been
95 to 96.
95 to 96, because you lost 97 that became 96.
And right. Yeah. And I thought that was a nice break, but things are going to happen in these events. So the thing that made this the biggest issue is that we've got such a vacuum between pay-per-views right now. We're still waiting on Cormier-Jones. And again, I think that's good for the actual build-up to each event. It would be bad for the UFC because all we're going to talk about for weeks and weeks and weeks is what is 200 going to look like? And you're insane if you don't think they're going to try to turn John Jones around for 200 if he's able to win.
If it's a walk-off homer, right? If it's Mark Hunt.
Right.
Right?
Even if it's just a solid win, you could make April, May, June, July.
What I'm saying.
Right, but you can make April, May, June, July happen. You've got 3.5 months. Even your suspensions are usually 90 days, and those can get lifted. So if he's in a war with DC, would it be a quick turnaround? Sure. But I'm still thinking that's got to be kind of what they're looking at. So this UFC 200 plan with Diaz McGregor, maybe that's their B plan. Maybe their A plan is John Jones. I don't know at this point. Maybe they want to put Holly Holm on the card. I think she would draw well, even if it wasn't a championship fight. So the vacuum that is the time between UFC pay-per-views is also going to lead to a lot of this discussion and a lot of us slamming a card that really we don't know how it's going to shape up until at least this pay-per-view and maybe even one more at that point.
Man, one more is going to be tight, though.
No, one more would be tight, but it would shake out a lot of things going on in the division at this point because you're going to have that one. That's going to be May 14th, so I don't know if anybody in that card could move it around, but what you do is you kind of see where guys land after that. And maybe some guy that didn't have a fight that maybe was... let me look at the card real quick, and maybe I can give a better example. So we've got the Souza-Belfort fight.
Yep.
So maybe there's a guy in middleweight that would naturally take one of those guys on. And you would look at that and go, oh, man, Souza took a big loss. So we're not going to put him in there with so-and-so. So that guy's free now for...
And that card's like... That's every Brazilian on the... Like, every legendary Brazilian in the...
You've got Anderson Silva, you've got Souza, you got Belfort, you got Verdum, you got Hua, you've got Damian Maia, Rogério Nogueira's on that card.
That's
yeah.
Like every Brazilian that they have is on the card.
Everybody who can drive to the arena is on this card. So, right. So again, I don't know if anybody necessarily on that card would be somebody you turn around, but you don't know what Joe Silva's thinking as far as matchmaking purposes. Like, if Anderson wins, we really want to hold off Bisping for him again or something like that. I don't know. If Anderson doesn't win, maybe we don't do the Bisping rematch because that would be a fun rematch.
Sure.
And maybe Anderson can win quick, again, walk off, but maybe that's something where if Anderson doesn't win, we can use Bisping. And we were going to wait longer. Does that make sense?
It does.
I'll give you a hard example because I don't think I'm explaining myself well. That's on me. Silva, if he wins the fight, he's going to rematch Bisping in August.
Yep.
That's maybe what they're looking at. Silva loses. Well, that doesn't mean Bisbing's going to go in there and fight Uriah Hall. So maybe Bisping gets on the 200 card now. That's kind of my example.
I got you.
We don't know what else that could be doing on that card as far as in their mind. Like, who's going to actually fight Verdum if he keeps the belt? Oh, maybe if he loses, this heavyweight's now available for that card, too, where we've got two big heavyweights already.
Right.
Those kind of things.
So we'll have to wait and see what happens there. This past weekend, we had UFC Fight Night 85, which was, the main event was exactly what we said it was going to be.
Is nobody mad at Mark Hunt, though, for doing essentially what Anderson Silva did?
Why would, I mean...
Is it different because it was in the middle of the round? So, I mean, if Frank wanted to get up, he could have got up.
Well, here's what I think is different is I understand what you're saying, but, like, Frank was gone.
No, Frank was gone, yeah.
Like, you know,
I just found it very
interesting. Mark Hunt made an entire career of this walk-off homer idea. I mean, mm-hmm. in fact, like every time you see his name, it's attached to this phrase of walk-off homer, this Babe Ruth mentality.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all, if you look at the fight, it's almost like he's not even looking. Like he's already walking away.
He knows how he landed the
punch. Knowing this thing is going to land and that the guy's going to crumple.
Yeah. And what was really impressive was when you look at where it landed, he landed the shot. But that's not a shot I would have necessarily gone, oh, that's it. Fight's over.
Right.
I was waiting for Frank to kind of, he took the shot and went down. I was waiting for him to maybe roll, try to grab a leg or something. And he was certainly out of it. I just thought in that one instance where he was walking away, I'm like, this is exactly what happened a couple weeks ago. And everybody's super pissed at Anderson Silva.
Yes. And
but
I,
again, in this fight, you had 2 more minutes for Frank to get up.
And he didn't even, and he didn't.
No, he didn't.
Right.
Yeah,
and,
no.
And let's be honest. To compare the two fights isn't really fair because Bisping was winning the first 2 rounds before this thing happens,
mm-hmm.
right? Frank,
and this happened 3 minutes in.
And Frank looked terrible. His takedown attempts were awful. And he just didn't look all there. And you know, this has plagued him his entire career. We talked about it last week, which Frank Mir is going to show up. Ken saying, look, guys, he needs to get it to the ground and because that's where he's going to be successful. And he tried terribly, but he tried and just couldn't do it. So he ended up having to stand in the middle of the ring and weather that storm that he couldn't weather.
Frank sometimes, and I don't know if he just, I mean, again, you get caught into in a fight and you're in a fight and you don't exactly know what you're going to do when those things start happening. I really feel like Frank thinks he can take a bigger punch than he can take. And Frank's been in there with some of the biggest dudes and he takes a really hard punch and he loses sometimes. Like, I don't know, and that could just be a little bit of a fallacy on Frank's part, because what he did in that cage seemed really dumb, the way he did it.
Yep.
And I don't know if that's just Frank going, I'm a heavyweight fighter, I've been in here with the biggest and baddest in the world, and he literally has. If you want to look at the roster of UFC fighters, he's been in there with some of the biggest and baddest in the world. You know, the lunchbox hands, as Randy Couture called him,
yes.
of Brock Lesnar. He feels like he's taking the biggest and the best shots in the industry, so maybe walking in there against a guy in his 40s, even though it's Mark Hunt, he feels like, well, I can take a couple punches and close this distance and get to my ground game. That obviously didn't happen in this fight, and it was over in the first round.
Yeah, and I mean, I just think if you look at his career, there's, you know, that's really a fallacy on his part, right? So if we go all the way back to...
Yeah, but you got to have the confidence when you go in there, right?
I guess, unless you look at your own... You know, your own mm-hmm. resume, right?
Right.
He gets knocked out. We'll go back to 2006. Knocked out by Brandon Vera. He submits Anthony Hardonk, which gets him to Brock Lesnar. If you remember that fight, Brock Lesnar actually floored him.
Yeah.
And that's when he gets the knee bar on, right? So he's, that's muscle.
Is that moment that in his career he's always remembering is UFC 81? Like, I can get knocked down. I can get beat up, but I can grab the sub.
Right, and then he beats Nogueira at 92 with a TKO, gets TKO'd at 100 by Brock Lesnar.
He stole Brock's strawberries.
Subs Czech Congo, gets knocked out by Shane Carwin, knocks out Krokop, decisions Roy Nelson, submits Nogueira, then is knocked out by
JDS.
Decision by Cormier, knocked out by Barnett, decision by Overeem, then knocks out... Bigfoot, knocks out Todd Duffy, who makes an appearance in Batman vs. Superman, and then loses to Andre, and then knocked out by Mark Hunt.
Okay.
So I don't see anywhere in there where I would be like, yeah, I can take the punches from the biggest guys ever.
You don't necessarily see that in the way the record shakes out, and that's not necessarily what I was saying. What I'm saying is when you read that record, though, he's been in there and taken shots from huge guys.
Totally.
And I feel like he's in some of these fights, and... He probably goes, well, you know what? Josh Barnett has knocked me out, so I can take a punch from somebody. I've been in a war with Alistair Overeem. I can take a punch. I've been in there with Bigfoot Silva, and I knocked him out. So that's the only thing I'm wondering in this fight is if he thought he could take more than he can at this point. And I think it's clear that maybe he does think he can take more because it was very sloppy, and sometimes guys can make you look at that like that. But I don't want to take anything away from the win, but it didn't look like Mark Hunt was doing anything to take away what should have been good technique and getting in and close for the takedown. Mark Hunt wasn't doing anything other than just kind of sliding back on those takedown attempts. So they were either very lazy takedown attempts or Frank just thought he could get inside and if he had to take a hit or two, he could. And clearly that didn't work out.
Not at all. I mean, and I don't know what you... I mean, Frank Mir, I don't know what you do with him next. Mark Hunt says he wants a top 4 or 5 guy, which I think is okay. We know what happens when he gets towards the upper echelon. I think it's going to get really dicey, especially since, number one, those guys have most of their dance cards full through the end of the year until next year, and it just gets harder. You know, there aren't very many Frank Mirs on there. And you know, what we said last week, I think
he's already lost to Stipe and Fabricio, so there's two of your top four. He's already lost to Junior Dos Santos. That's another one of your top four.
Hasn't fought Kane yet, though.
No, he hasn't fought Kane. So he jumps to fighting Kane?
Well, no, I mean, just like if you're trying to match make,
I guess
know,
so. I guess you could give him back that fight against Junior Dos Santos, but I mean, he lost that to a kick, I believe. So I mean,
yeah, and JDS has Rothwell next on April 10th.
Okay.
So again, like I'm saying, these guys are kind of all swirled up, so you got to find a place for him.
I guess it's not bad if you want to give a guy, if you're going to give him a fight, you don't necessarily give him a guy he's beat already, so that makes sense. But like you said, a lot of these guys, they're already full, and you want to see where he's going to land here.
What do you do with Mir? Is this the end?
I don't know. That's up to Frank Mir at this point.
What would you do?
It looked like the end, but I've seen too many times where you see a guy like Andrei Arlovsky.
Right.
And he doesn't look great now, but man, he had a streak going for a while.
Yep.
I don't know. Frank Mir is like one of the unfulfilled promises of the UFC, even as a UFC champion. He's one of those dudes that you look at and you just thought he was going to run it for years and years.
If it wasn't,
you don't know how much that motorcycle accident
took.
Man,
if it wasn't for that bike accident, like, could you imagine what?
Well, I mean, he would have had up until Brock showed up and Randy decided to get up in the division. That was not the best UFC heavyweight division we've seen. He would have been feasting on dudes like Tim Sylvia and Gabe Gonzaga and basically doing that for the better part of 3 to 4 years. And he didn't get a chance to do that because of the motorcycle accident. I think it's close to being done for Frank. I think he's a guy that can still compete when he wants to try to compete, but I don't know if he can take those punches anymore that's going to happen in the top 10. We've gone from he can't really hang in the top 5 to maybe he can't hang in the top 10. Give him another shot, I think, but you got to really see where he is after that fight.
And then the other fight that happened this past weekend that lots of people are talking about, especially when you want to talk about unnecessary punishment taken to somebody who had a fight completely reversed on themselves, is Hector Lombard and Neil Magny. And if you didn't watch that fight, Hector Lombard did exactly what you thought Hector Lombard was going to do in that first round, which is floor Neil Magny, but was unable
to. Then he was tired.
Unable to finish and ran out of gas. And then
he
floored him again in the second, but then after that, it was game on for Neil Magny, who beat him up for the entire end of that round, and Lombard was exhausted. And you know, going into this,
Neil was exhausted at the end of that round.
Neil was exhausted, but he had been floored twice, right?
He was exhausted because he had been beaten on Lombard for the better part of 3 minutes. Now, I know if you want to go back, 2020 hindsight, okay, this is terrible. Why didn't they just stop it? I rewatched, I didn't find any point in that round where it looked like Hector was not intelligently defending himself. Was he doing it well? Was he blocking every punch? No. He was moving. He was putting his hands up. He was shifting his body. There was no point where he was laid out. There was no point where his hands were down. There was no point where he was taking punishment without trying to intelligently defend himself. Now, this is where this line comes in. Well, he's going to lose this fight, so stop the fight. But is he? We just saw in that first round a huge turnaround. And again, I didn't think he was going to win the fight simply because you could tell he was gassing before. And what Neil Magny did in that second round, I think all the the next round, UFC fighters take a page out of that book when you're trying to finish a fight. And a guy is still defending, but you know you're winning. And you're clearly getting frustrated because the ref won't stop the fight. I can see why the ref didn't stop the fight in that second round. Do you disagree?
I don't disagree, but I know why I did in the moment, right? Because when you see a guy that was in a traditional triangle being pounded out, and then round ends and he goes, okay, we'll just do that again, and then I'll get into a mounted triangle and try it from there, it really feels like you're throwing everything but the kitchen sink at a guy in order to try and finish the fight. Now, in hindsight, as you just said, Neil Magny lost round one. That might have even been 10-8, right? Because he doesn't do anything except for defend himself for after he gets floored.
Right.
Is, you know, you got to deal with two things here. One, the gift of hindsight. And two, your knowledge of the fighters. You and I both know that Hector Lombard isn't all of a sudden going to get cardio into the third round.
No.
Right? He's not going to get a spark of cardio and be able to stand up and even go. I mean,
But he might be able to land a punch. Maybe. And he's doing what you ask of him. You ask for these guys to intelligently defend themselves. If you want to change the fight and go, I don't know if you want to call it an imminent loss. I don't know what wording you want to figure out.
You don't want to do that. Let's not stop saying that.
But that's what I'm saying. That's where we're going if you want that fight stopped in the second round.
Well, I just think...
If you want that fight stopped in the second round, what you're saying is you want the ref to decide this guy's going to lose anyways. That's what you're wanting the ref to decide. And that's why I said go to the third round if you're a fighter and look at that. Because we see a lot of fighters get frustrated like Neil Magny in that round. The guy's barely doing anything. He's not stopping all the punches, but he's getting in your way and you're not knocking him out. That's the other thing, too. People talk about this fight should have been stopped. Those were 30 unanswered blows. No, I'm sorry. If there were 30 unanswered blows, Hector Lombard would have been unconscious, and he was not at any point.
Right.
He was getting his arms in the way. He was moving. He was intelligently defending himself. Watch the fight, guys. Watch the third round. If somebody's doing that...
Yeah,
but
fight metrics told me it was 30 unanswered punches.
Why wasn't he unconscious?
But fight metrics told me it was...
And those are 30 punches that land. Those are 30 punches that score points, but the guy was still conscious. Again... Let's
New York assemblywoman told me
on the TV he looked unconscious. Go to the third round. Guess what? That was the genius move. I texted you right after that.
Yes,
I watched the fight. I said, so I guess you'll stop it if we're in a mounted triangle. And you will, because you know what you just did? You took the guy's arms out of play.
Yep.
You took the guy's arms out of play. He can't intelligently defend himself. So there's your two options. You can do a mounted triangle. You can do a crucifix, and you're going to get the fight ended. Guys, there's your two options. You're beating a guy up. You're going to quote-unquote win anyways. Transition to one of those two positions, and you'll get the ref to stop the fight. So stop bitching about a ref not stopping a fight, because those are two good options if you're actually in a fight like Neil Magny's in. Otherwise, what you're telling me is you just want the ref to stop the fight because you think you beat him up enough. Because if you don't have the balls to then go for the mounted triangle or the crucifix or a position where the guy clearly cannot defend himself, you don't really think you put him out, but you're hoping the ref is going to stop the fight.
And what's really interesting is if we rewind the clock a little bit in the last month, you're seeing this interesting resurgence of jiu-jitsu positions, because there was a while for about a year and a half where jiu-jitsu was really not...
No, you get them out and you pound them out and you wait for the ref to stop it.
Right. Well, now you're seeing really slick rear naked chokes like we saw in both the fights at 196. And you're seeing, you know, like you said, okay, I can't get, if I've got him in a regular triangle, both of his arms are, you guys can't see this, but both of his arms are in front of himself so he can defend a little bit. If I get to a mounted triangle, I can get him in a position where one of his arms can't get around me.
And I just keep punching
just
him in the face.
Punching him in the face, and that's the end of it. And to your point, the crucifix is another place that you can do that.
Well, and we saw this, and as frustrating as it was, we saw Roy Nelson do this back on The Ultimate Fighter, and Kimbo had to go home. He didn't really, this is a fight where nobody thought that Kimbo was hurt.
Not at all.
But Kimbo couldn't do anything, and that's the intelligently defend yourself part. That's where the ground game comes into play. And there's a line between thinking the ref should stop the fight and wanting the ref to stop the fight and then actually having the ref stop the fight. And I feel like we're too often wanting the ref to stop the fight, and then it gets stopped. The guy is intelligently defending himself. He's moving. He's adjusting. He's taking, quote-unquote, 30 unanswered blows. I get it. He's probably going to lose, but then we're down that slippery slope. Are we going to say stop the fight upon imminent loss? We don't want that.
Please stop saying that out loud. You're going to start
like somebody in New York's going to go, I heard this thing
this
where
imminent loss thing that we're going to start.
But that's essentially what you're telling me.
Sure.
And Neil Magny, I'm glad you went out there and did what you did the next round, because you helped me illustrate the point than I ever could have. You went out there the next round and you go, okay, you know what? I've got to really prove this guy's out. I'm just going to have to take his arms away. And if you've really got a guy that beat up where you think the ref should stop the fight, you can take his arms away. Because if you can't do it, then the ref shouldn't be stopping the fight.
Great fight. And Neil Magny back on the winning streak. He's won two in a row at this point. And he looked fantastic after that first round. And I think if you weather the storm with Lombard, he's one of those guys that you weather the storm. And this is usually what happens. For the rest of April, you get Fight Night 86. That'll be on April 10th. Fox 19, April 16th. And then, as we've been talking, UFC 197, Cormier-Jones 2. So that's what you got coming up. So this weekend, you get a little bit of a respite.
I don't think those two like each other.
They do not.
They seem
like
to
each
dislike
other. They
one
are not
another.
Going to send each other Easter cards this week.
I'm going to spit in your mouth.
Yeah, okay.
What?
All right.
That's weird.
So follow
That's
along.
Where they got that weird gay porn reference.
Right? Follow along. Follow along.
See what you did, John?
Right? You
Daniel, calm down.
Stop it.
Where are we online? Where's
so,
the,
so hot.
You need to rate us on iTunes.
Rate us
don't
on iTunes.
Don't rate us on this show. Rate us as a whole, like the critics are.
Exactly. On a sliding scale of a whole.
Not like Batman Superman.
Or find us. Please go see Batman Superman. The critics are totally wrong.
They are. Let's get that in now. It might not. It's not the best superhero movie ever made.
No.
It's better than a lot of the Marvel movies, my opinion.
Yeah.
It's certainly better than these idiots on Rotten Tomatoes that are saying it's worse than the Green Hornet.
Yeah, and the one thing I will say without spoiling anything is you got to go into it knowing that not all superhero movies are created equal, and this one's going to be a little bit darker than you expect.
Right. If you need a man in a robot costume saying underoos, this is not going to be the film for you.
Correct. But, like I said, go see it and judge for yourself because the critics couldn't. It is not a 30% on. I mean,
this is insane.
I've seen some 30% on Rotten Tomatoes. This is not it, my friend.
That movie where the little girl gets thrown out of a tree and they cure her cancer that way, that movie's at like 50% on Rotten Tomatoes. I think that's how it works.
Yeah, that's clearly how it works. Yes.
I really. By the way, if you homeschool your kids, don't go watch that movie because I don't want you getting any ideas.
Happy Easter, everybody.
Oh, that's right. This is the Good Friday Show.
Happy Easter.
Okay.
All right. Catch us on Twitter, on Facebook. Search WOW Show. We'll catch you next week. It is your Easter version of Way of the Warrior.